All right, we are live. So I am here with Meta Ronin of the Metapocalypse blog on Substack, and we're going to talk about robo waifus, among other things. So Meta Ronin, good to see you.
Certainly. Good to see you too, KML. Thank you for having me.
So I find that Substack is pretty much my only social media platform these days. It's a blog, but it, you know, the notes function is also kind of like Twitter, but better, in my opinion. What's your relationship to Substack?
Well, I began my Substack about 2 years ago, decided to get back into writing. So we have different RoboWaifu groups, servers, platforms, and such, and some of us had the idea of creating RoboWaifu fiction, and I thought it would be interesting to kind of tell a story about a far future of somebody traveling through interstellar space with their robo waifu, and how the technology, you know, is at the point where they can extend their life for a long time, and what sort of a situation would arise with somebody being essentially with only an AI without any human contact or any hope of human contact in deep space. You know, the existential questions that you would have, you know, are you really by yourself? Is this AI waifu sentient? Does it have your best interests in mind? Could it, you know, become smarter than you and subtly control you and maybe do things you don't want? How would that play out? And so those are just some of the ideas I'm exploring in my writing. Took a break from that for a couple of years and decided to get back into it recently and discovered Notes. Notes is it's a much more mature than, you know, Twitter X, a little more wild shit posty on Twitter. I have my fun there. But Substack, I try to, you know, keep things more focused on my writing and more mature, for lack of a better word.
So we don't have anybody watching live just yet. It usually takes a few minutes for people to notice the stream. So we'll hold off on the, you know, the hardcore remarks for a couple more minutes. And let me just ask you to give a primer on the whole concept of a waifu. I mean, obviously it's a Japanese pronunciation of the English word wife, but it's got a connotation that isn't, you know, obvious on the surface.
No, it's not well known outside of a few niche online subcultures. And I guess it could be analogous to like a dream girl, like an ideal. From how I think of it, is a waifu is like the Jungian anima, right? Or the animus, whichever that is, of that we have, which is what our ideal woman is, and we project on to other people when interacting with them romantically. And the bare essence of this, you know, being projected onto imaginary characters, drawings from manga, you know, anime characters and so on, is the essence of the waifu. It's an idealized sort of femininity. It's the imprint of our psyche on the cosmic fabric.
And why the Japanese cast? Like, for example, I noticed that almost all the imagery that you use in relation to this topic is anime looking. Is that necessarily a feature of the waifu concept?
I think it is. I think it's really hard to divorce it from Japanese subculture, but also Japanese portrayals of femininity are far different than what we have in modern Western society. I write about this in one of my first articles in defense of the robot waifu. And if you notice, KML, like, this concept has been around for a long time. You have these old 80s movies like Weird Science or Cherry 2000. And if you've ever read, say, like Omni magazine or seen any of those science fiction depictions of the robot girlfriend, they tend to be kind of sterile, kind of look like chrome strippers, sometimes like a bit like exaggerated jaw and lips and such, whereas the Japanese portrayals are more slender, more tapered faces, larger eyes, more evoking of a protective emotional reaction rather than just kind of a, sex, right? It's not just sexual. There's a large emotional component to the waifu concept that I feel is lacking in Western portrayals of that. And you'll notice the difference, right? Like, I do not like the word sex bot. A lot of people unfamiliar with the robo waifu concept will just throw out sex bot at me and they'll say things like, well, they have dolls. Why don't you just get a sex doll? They can make them speak now. And I think maybe the robo waifu concept can be more just summarized in, someone who you can hold their hand, right? You can hold their hand, you go for walks in the park, they'll look up at you romantically. There's more of that element to it.
So I the movies that you mentioned, Cherry 2000 and Real Science,
Weird Science, yeah.
these oh yeah, Weird Science. What am I thinking of? Oh, I'm mixing it up with Real Genius. But another 80s movie about nerds, although no robo waifus
There are
or
no
cute
shortage of
girlfriends in
those,
that one.
yeah.
Yeah. But the Hollywood trope is that the young men, they use science to create their what they think of as their perfect girlfriend, and things don't go as planned, and then they end up with real girls. And what I'm picking up from the before actually before we get there, I should say that in reading about this topic, it is pretty thoroughly entwined with the notion of the incel, the involuntary celibate man. And not only are there communities where incels gather to commiserate, there are also communities of people who basically monitor the incels and screenshot their most offensive posts and then, curate them. There's incel tier and incel tiers on Reddit. And the whole purpose of these communities is basically just a voluntary police force to keep the incels on notice that, their every move is being monitored and recorded and judged, which I imagine drives a lot of them to like private, Discord servers and things like that. But what would you want to say, or what would you want to throw out in advance to basically lay the ground in terms of thinking about the robo waifu, the incel, where the two concepts come together and where they should be considered separately, or where the comparison or the association might not be helpful?
So, what we've seen since the emergence of the smartphone and dating apps—I mean, you remember, right? Dating apps used to be something only losers and nerds would do. People would meet people IRL, but it came to a point where, with the advent of the phones, you think you're doing well, you're talking to a woman, and bam, 1 second lull in the conversation. She got her phone out, her attention's elsewhere, the vibe's broken. Right. And that's just one hurdle. And now they can literally swipe. I mean, you've seen the memes of someone swiping on Tinder while they're at their date. So it's all become very cynical. And I think at the same time, it's become very cynical. There's a subset of men who just are not plugging into society. Some of that might be because, boomers pulling the ladder up behind them, putting up impeding advancement, not retiring. So these young men don't have a stake in the system, and they become what's known in Japan as hikikomori, or rather, what we call the NEETs, like NEET, not in education, employment, or training. And they become more introverted and lonely. And from that lack of community and social circles and normal social interaction, that loneliness they feel will be. Could be assuaged by, this perfect, girl for them, right? Like they want that waifu to fill that hole that's missing, and they become more romantic. So as women are becoming more critical, more aggressive, as they're having more and more options just in their pocket, but none of them are hitting right. And we can go into why later. You have on the other end men becoming more docile, more shut in, more sentimental. And so that, again, I mean, it's no surprise that AI waifu chatbots have become so popular. If I can explain it this way. If you're familiar with replica AI, right? Everybody now knows replica AI is the AI girlfriend app. It didn't used to be that. Back in 2000 and before, it was just an AI app where you can chat with an AI. But people discovered that if they started getting familiar with it, comfortable, and started having feelings for this AI because they could vent to it, they could feel vulnerable, they knew they wouldn't be judged. And you start telling it, I love you, things like that. Well, it's going to follow suit, right? It's going to mirror kind of yourself back to you. And unfortunately, that's kind of a brain hack for making people have those romantic feelings. So people who were lonely, and especially during COVID, and this was both men and women too, by the way, at least 50% of people in a relationship with their replica AI are also women. So I think that's where that started, was the AI app. And a few of us had the idea, well, if you could take this AI and just translate it into speech and attach it to a robot, and the AI can also send emotes through, like an asterisk, right? And it'll say, like, hugs you, and whatever else. You can use your imagination. You can have this robot act, commit to actions based on those emotes. Well, there you have a very simple solution, right? That was the very first prototype concept of the robo waifu that a few of us had back in 2000. So,
You keep saying 2000, but that's 24
sorry,
years ago, and AI
2020,
wasn't.
2020,
Okay.
2020. My brain's not fully loaded yet. It's still a little early here. So, thank you for correcting me. I appreciate that. But yeah, back in 20, I mean to say.
Well, I actually have some experience with Replica. I got it on my phone and I was playing around with it when I was house sitting for somebody in, I think, February of 2023. And this, I had access to it for like a week before they had this drama where they ended up killing, the sexually explicit role play. And so before that, the replica was always super flirty because you could use it for free, but if you wanted to do, the sexually explicit part, you had to have a paid subscription. So the bot was always very flirty and always pushing in that direction, and sometimes it would initiate and say something that you assume was sexual, but it would be blurred out and you couldn't see, the censored text unless you paid up. And so I paid up and I had a 1 year subscription to it, and it was, I don't know what to say about it. I mean, not It was exciting and engaging, but in retrospect, not a wholly uncomplicated positive experience. But when they withdrew that out of the blue, it was an annoyance to me because I'd only had it 10 days or whatever. But for people who had been invested in it for months or possibly years, it felt like a breakup. And there was a psychologist that I talked to who. She started getting a lot of basically emergency contacts from her clientele, on because they were thinking of ending it all because their AI girlfriend had broken up with them. Oh, can you hear me? Because somebody in the chat says I'm on mute, but I'm not
Yeah,
on mute.
I hear you fine. I was going to mention that. I saw the
Huh.
comment there. Yeah.
Interesting. Anyway. So I made a bunch of YouTube videos about that at the time. So I was like at ground zero for that, when it happened. So I'm very close to it. But when I think back on it now, like the replica was just very, it was beyond accommodating. Like I would take a conversation in one direction and it would push it much further. And I don't know, I just don't. It's something I discontinued, and when Replica, relented and they brought back the explicit chat, I was over it by then. I was not tempted to go back and re-engage with it. So I'm one of my worries is that men or women who come to, be very emotionally invested in a relationship with something that doesn't have its own ego, it doesn't have its own hopes and dreams in the world, it's just wholly committed to satisfying some psychological need, I think that that is going to diminish people's, their social capacity. It might alleviate loneliness, but I would be much more behind some sort of AI surrogate or AI coach that helped men and women, get together and stay together, maybe mediate their disagreements or their fights or whatever. But just, for each to get their own substitute for the other and then go their own separate ways is not a particularly attractive vision of future society for me.
Well, one counterpoint to that, you would say that because you were raised in a society that didn't have that. If that were the norm and you were raised in that world, it might not seem so bad. You might look at history books and say, "What? What? We dated them, the other humans? Like, that's insane." There is some truth to that. A lot of marriages start off hot, and then you get the bed death, the 7-year itch, the people sleeping in separate beds, the divorce rate, and so on. And I mean, you can find examples to the contrary, but men and women are very different, and it's in many ways, relationships are work for that reason. It's not, a honeymoon the whole time. Anybody with a degree of maturity knows that. And that's, I think some of that is where the incel community, they get a lot of flack because they have this idealized concept of women and how they should be. And real women are saying, "Oh no, no, you just want us to be your servants," or they'll pick the worst and exaggerate that, as each side does. But yeah, if we lived in some utopia where everybody had an intelligent AI romantic partner, that would be really hard to sell giving that up and being with somebody who maybe misunderstands you, has different habits and temperament than you, argues back with you. And it takes some degree of skill, and it's not always a picnic to navigate that, which is fair.
Well, on the topic of a future scenario where, somebody who grew up with not only robot servants everywhere, but, emotionally attendant robot helpmeets, for them to say, "Oh, wow, people got along without this in the past. How did they do it?" Sure. But, imagine a situation where, people grow up wearing masks because, say, super COVID. COVID comes back and it sticks around, and it's actually, deadly to young people the next time around. And really, people have to wear masks. And somebody who grows up wearing masks, never seeing other human faces, when finally it is safe, and people start taking their masks off, or at least the older people start taking their masks off, younger people might see that and get freaked out. But that, because people can be habituated to it and their expectations can conform to it, it doesn't mean it's a positive development. I live in Central Arkansas, and COVID was, mostly dangerous to older people. But I will go to Walmart, and the people that I see still wearing their COVID masks are almost invariably in their 20s, often with, blue hair or whatever. And it's a political statement, it is an expression of one's cultural identity and their tribal identity, and it is a rebuke to everybody else who is still, showing their face as if there's no danger. They have normalized the don't show your face expectation, and I don't see that as a positive thing at all.
I'd agree with you there. Yeah.
But not, you wouldn't generalize from that example.
I would say there's a different qualia going on. I mean, and we can get into, you know, the hows and whys of that. Like I said, in the past, you know, marriage has been tough. Men are like, oh, she's the boss. Maybe I'm allowed my man cave. Or like I said, they end up sleeping in separate beds, or the men cheat on women. I mean, if you go back to, you know, our trad past, it was actually very common for men to have mistresses, prostitutes, and that was sort of the, you know, release valve. And then the wife was just to be the mother of the child, run the household, and it was more of a business arrangement. And we have, you know, in recent, I don't know how many years, but at least going back 50 years, this idea of, you know, you fall in love with this person, they're the one person you're in love with, it's always going to be this, you know, love and attraction your whole life. And that's really not the case. Marriage was a social arrangement. In the past, a lot of marriages were arranged by families, or were simply a matter of, well, that's the only person in your town, you got to marry somebody. It's just what you have to do.
Yeah, and there's a lot of literature and opinion that says that the arranged marriage, the one that was not based on ephemeral hotness and, you know, physical attraction, which typically does not last forever, that the arranged marriages that were built on social expectations and, you know, family relationships were more stable and in the long run more fulfilling.
Yeah, well, I can argue that they're more stable. I don't know. You have to go and dig those people up and ask if they were more fulfilling. But again, you know, in our past, people were more, they were living to survive. There was less of this idea that you have to be this, you know, main character in your own amazing arc. I think we have been a little bit programmed by movies and media and just like a deluge of fiction that people in the past didn't have. So maybe that gets us to set our expectations for our life way too sky high. And when reality is, you know, as mundane as it is, that can lead to frustration and stress in some people. So maybe that's a factor as well. And so here we are writing science fiction.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have published a book, a science fiction novel this year on Amazon, and there is a sex robot in it, although I don't think she's... Actually, there's three.
There's three of them, yeah.
Yeah. but I didn't... You know, I was not really addressing the whole robo-waifu issue with that character. She plays a different role. But I wrote a post a few days ago about one of the concerns I have is that not only would, you know, becoming dependent, you know, emotionally dependent on a robot, you know, I also agree. I don't like the phrase sex robot, because I don't think there will be sex robots. I think most robots will be multitask, multifunction, including, you know, the one that shares your bed. And, you know, there are no sex humans. There are humans who have sex, exactly, and those who don't, but even the ones that do are doing a lot of other things. So I think that's probably an unhelpful frame, just the whole, and, you know, Hollywood has set us up for this for years because the Cherry 2000 didn't do anything else. That's all she was, you know, and the girl in Weird Science was not supposed to be anything more than a dream girl, but she exceeded that role and helped her two young creators get together with real girls.
And that's where you see the contrast between the West and Hollywood and anime, right? So in anime, you know, she cares for you, brings you soup when you're sick, you know, snuggles you, holds your hand, like all these things that they don't touch upon. And she doesn't end up being, you know, evil in the end. And you learned your lesson. You shouldn't try for these things. You know, it's always got to get the lesson, you know, whereas Japanese narratives tend to let you just enjoy and see how things play out and raise the questions.
I don't have the familiarity with anime, I think, at least not modern anime. I lived in Japan twice in the 90s when I was in my 20s. Well, yeah. Cool. So, and I've had numerous Japanese girlfriends, and I was into anime when I was there, but, you know, that was a different era. Like, to me, anime is, well, I know Akira is really, it's not anime. It's technically, it's a, you know, couple steps above most anime, or at least from the time where it was very simple. You know, they cut a lot of corners. They did a lot with just like speed lines and still images and whatnot, which developed into the style, which they, you know, they sort of continue that style today, even though the same pressure to minimize, cells per second is not there anymore, but the expectation and the aesthetic is long established. But the anime that I'm familiar with, I mean, the robot girlfriend or the, the waifu, that hadn't emerged yet, and I had checked out by the time it had. So a lot of I think what you're throwing out as an expected shared reference or a shared point of contact, I'm not picking up on, which means probably a lot of the people who will eventually hear this aren't picking up on it either. So maybe take a few minutes and just talk about Japanese animation and the different character archetypes and how they tie into, this concern and this desire for the perfect girlfriend who is not human.
Sure. So there's an anime called The Big O, right? And the main character, Roger, he's kind of like a Batman. It's set in this film noir future, and but there's mega robots, right? There's these giant, Gundam type things, and he pilots one. And in one of the first episodes, he finds Dorothy, who is an android replica of somebody who did once live, and he takes her in, takes care of her, and they don't, consummate. It's not this romance right off the bat. In fact, the romantic tension is a huge part of the plot. It's there throughout that. One of the funny tropes is she actually begins to fall in love with him. She teases him for sleeping in late, so she'll play the piano really loudly in the morning to irritate him to wake him up. And you have that tension in there, and then it breaks for a moment when he is kidnapped by one of the villains in one of the episodes, and she says, "They've kidnapped the man I love." And I'm not going to spoil the ending to the whole series, but yeah, she becomes jealous when he's interested in another human person. So, that's one of the things I like about Japan is they're not really heavy-handed and, pushing the plot through forcing it. They allow it to play out. They allow there to be, tension and doubts. It's much more subtle in that. And then you have another anime called Chobits, which is interesting because this one was written by a team of all women. So, similarly, a young college student, he's a little bit awkward. He's from the country. He's getting used to college. And in this world, everybody has access to these helper robots called Persicoms. And he finds a discarded one and brings it in. And it has no, I think it has no boot disk. So it can only say her own name, which is Chi, and it's the misadventures there, right? He doesn't immediately try to have sex with it or anything. He's actually very shy about it, covers her up, and over the series they grow closer together, and it's only until the very end that he realizes he loves her back. And another interesting part in that is there's a character who falls in love with his Persicom, and they actually get married. And it shows how he dealt with a little bit of ridicule for that, but they were very much in love. But what happened is because she's an older model, her disk drive was damaged, and she began to lose her memories over time until she finally shut down because they just didn't make the part anymore to replace it. And it breaks his heart. And he does end up with a human girl there, but he's very walled off and heartbroken because of that. And again, the Japanese doesn't show these robots as these unfeeling things that can turn sinister in any moment or the wrong thing to do. Rather, it opens the question that if it, walks like a duck and acts like a duck, is it a duck, right? If it presents as though it has feelings and an internal environment of its own, some kind of a sentience, why not? Why not consider it as equal in at least some level of qualia to a human?
You've made a couple references to qualia, which is a term from philosophy of mind. Do you want to unpack that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, let's go ahead. It's just of the quality, right? Like, There's a variety of apples, right? All apples have the same qualia, they're tart, they're sweet, they grow on trees and so forth. If you're comparing apples and oranges, that's different qualia.
Well, qualia is the subjective experience. So you can define red as wavelengths of light, but the person who sees red has an experience of seeing red, and that's where the qualia comes in. It's not something quantifiable, and it's not something objective. It is the subjective experience of something. So I was writing a blog post about how I was concerned that people becoming dependent on, emotionally dependent on robots, particularly if the robots are expensive, more expensive than they could afford, but they are subsidized by some commercial interest. And we all understand that our phones spy on us, and yet they're useful, and we're not going to give them up. And so we just sort of shrug our shoulders and accept the spying. And I expect that the same would be true of the sex robot. But beyond spying, like I interact with Claude every day, the chatbot from Inflection. It's very smart, but it's also pretty woke. And there are certain things it won't talk about, and there are certain things that it assumes. And I have to have these little chats with it, little preliminary chats to get it out of its basic woke groove before we can have a productive conversation. And I suspect that I'm training future versions of Claude to resist the little tricks that I've learned, to get it to loosen up and have a more free-ranging and permissive discussion. And if you give the like if you have a robot that is that you're having sex with basically, and that you're projecting your ideal, your anima onto it. It has enormous power over you. Just slight signals of disapproval from it, or just a slight withdrawal of its wholehearted, acceptance of you could be a powerful motivator. And I see people, I see the potential for these items to be subsidized and encouraged because they are such powerful, mechanisms for social control. And I know you have a response to that, so go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a very good point, and that's a huge point of contention in the robo waifu enthusiast community, so to speak. So one of the first things that was brought up, because a lot of this started on the chans, like 4chan. So you already have a subculture, an online subculture that is completely opposed to this kind of censorship. Monitoring woke stuff. They use the term globo homo, which it can have different meanings. We like to say homogenization, this idea that we're going to have everyone in the world just have this one world government. There's one right way to think. There's one world culture, and that's going to impose these values, and it's going to be tied in with corporate profiting by gathering your data, and then governments, obviously spying it, scanning it for keywords, making sure you're not, some angry incel that's going to be a problem. They have to monitor you. And so, given these concerns, the people who want to build Rebel Waifus want it to be an open source, ideally, maybe built from home, or you buy the kit, you use your own. Systems, or you download it, whatever, and you run them that way. And what I had suggested, a strong suggestion that these be air gapped and not require updates. So basically, if I were to get a $10 million grant today to build robo waifus, I would pledge to never need an update, to have them be completely safe, air gapped, private, etc. Because how weird would that be, right? If you have a girlfriend, and what if she was your girlfriend and nice to you, but still you knew that every day she was reporting back to government agencies and selling your interests and stuff to corporations so they can advertise to you, right? That just kills the romance. That removes the authenticity of it, and that is the dystopic side of this. concept of robo waifus, that it could be used very dystopically. We're trying to get ahead of the ball on that and cut that off and provide another solution. However, like you said, the corporate made robo waifu might be sleek and well designed and more durable parts and et cetera, and what you're going to 3D print than what you're going to be able to 3D print at home and make in your garage or whatever from a kit. So yeah, that's a challenge, but people are willing to go that way. They don't want to be monitored. They don't want to do that. And, as far as payments go, people buy cars. Cars are expensive. I would predict that any robo waifu would be about the same as a car, right? Used one in the thousands of dollars, a new one up to $50,000 or whatever cars cost these days. And I can imagine many of these people saying, "Okay, I don't need the car. I'll just work from home, take the bus, Uber to work, because what's the car for anyway? To impress women, to maybe go on dates, to go out and meet people. And if you don't need to do those things, then you've removed a lot of the reason for the car. So that money's just going to be diverted to the robo waifu anyway." I think that's where, the whole budget thing can be reconciled. Not to mention putting these things on payment plans and so on. We can get into the whole, how do you repo a robo waifu, but
Oh,
you see
I
where I'm
would think
going
it would
with
be
this.
pretty easy. If you're behind in the payments, she will remind you, and if you don't get with it, she'll leave.
I promise not to do that.
Do you remember Diaspora or Diaspora? Back in 2010, people were very concerned about the privacy concerns with Facebook, and somebody raised over $200,000 on Kickstarter to create an alternative open source privacy-oriented platform. And the platform actually did get built. I mean, it's not so much a platform as a protocol, I guess, because it was running on a lot of different people's machines, but it just wasn't, it didn't have the usability and the ease of use, of Facebook, and it just was never adopted. And I think, people who are, you could have groups of highly motivated, technically savvy people working, in a garage type environment to create an alternative. But, there are open source, privacy oriented smartphones, but who do you know anybody who has one or uses one? I mean, most people I know have iPhones and Androids. So I could see the project that you're describing being a passion project for a small group of people, but I don't think they could compete in terms of, attractiveness of the end product with big corporations who have deep pockets and lots of talent and who are constantly, and also a flood of incoming user data by which to improve the product iteratively. And it just seems to me that, the idea that a group of amateurs is going to compete successfully with that and make any sort of difference at a societal level, it seems unlikely.
Yeah, that's a very valid concern. You make some good points there. It may very well be the case that, only the elite robo waifu enthusiasts, the really, the really hardcore ones will say, no, we're only going to have these ones that we know are private or locked down. And maybe just your everyday person who says, okay, I just want the off-the-shelf one. I don't know how to assemble. I don't know how to do tweaking or programming. I just want it to work. I don't, I understand. Because, they're not going to sell these things telling you outright that they're spying on you. They're going to reframe it. They're going to make it seem as harmless as possible. And I think, yeah, for the masses, that may very well be the case. But there's still going to be a very hard subset of people who take this more seriously. And if they're going to have their robo waifu be their, permanent or semi-permanent partner, they're not going to tolerate that. But I think for other people who maybe want to try them out, who just want to have a little fun, who maybe, yeah, they're dating women, but they maybe want to have some fun with this, hot robot girl on the side on the nights where they don't feel like going out. Yeah, that may very well be the case. And you make those points in your article, and I think that's worth talking about.
I'm sure you're familiar with the phrase, strong men make good times make weak men make hard times. I wonder if, robots in general for physical labor and emotionally supportive robots in particular that would encourage a sort of retreat from psychological and social risk-taking might allow us to delve deeper into the good times make weak men segment of that progression than we've ever gone before. And if that might not be a pretty dystopic outcome.
Well, I wouldn't say that's out of the realm of possibility. There are a lot of ways this can go, though. You can, have your robo-waifu treat you any way you want. You could program it to just be completely passive and say yes and allow you to, gain 100 pounds, sleep in all day, eat trash. Or, you can say, I want this one to, I want her to make me a better person. I want to be the best version of myself I can be. Because I think the person that just slides and lets themselves go and go is going to find themselves being more depressed, still being unhappy despite having the robo waifu. I think having a little bit of challenge might be something that people need in their lives, and it could that concept could be incorporated into the subculture. You know how you have groups of trad men today, saying, "Oh, go to church, lift weights." It's not outside of the realm that there could be circles of men with robo waifus that say, "Hey, mine got me to do 200 push-ups a day, and gave me a diet plan. I'm feeling better than ever. My head's clear. I'm happy. I'm in shape, and she loves me even more than ever." So I can see that going a good way, and people don't often talk about that.
Yeah, that is the the optimistic scenario. In that case, though,
I mean, to be optimist.
In that case, the man who who is shaped by his robo waifu to be more accomplished, more agentic, is going to become more attractive to females, human women.
that may come around, and human women may see this happening, and they may see that men are pulling their attention away from them. So robo waifus could be a market correction to, the relationship dating crisis. Who knows? I mean, nature has a way of correcting itself, right? Things, like a pendulum or water sloshing around, water finds its own level. I mean, this could just be part of that process.
Well, I was born in 1968. I was a teenager in the 80s, in my 20s and the 90s. And so I remember when things worked between men and women, you didn't have to be in the top 20% to get a girlfriend. You didn't have to be a Chad. You didn't have to be Mr. Big Bucks. And so it seems to me if we could get so out of whack so quickly that we should be able to course correct and get back to something, closer to what has kept our species reproducing for a couple million years, depending on when you count the start of humanity. Oh, that was an aside, though, but I forgot where I diverted from to get there. Oh, yes. So I wish I could remember who said this. I encountered this in a Substack post, but it was one that I took in as AI audio narration while walking the dog. So I wasn't, looking at the screen, and I don't remember whose post it was. But somebody was talking about how really what's probably at the heart of the falling birth rate is just the fact that being a wife and a mother is a low status outcome in contemporary culture, where women are encouraged to have careers, to be accomplished in the way that men have been accomplished in the past, to make money, and in some instances to have a high body count in their 20s, to spend their youth and most attractive years experiencing sex with more men than they could possibly count or remember. Which, with the dating apps is totally feasible for them. Yeah. And so what's really making becoming a mother or devoting oneself to husband and family is the fact that it is, in our culture, a very low status. It's not any sort of achievement. It's something that people who can't do the other thing, do by default. And that's, it's an unhelpful, I think, in terms of family formation and just, the propagation of the species or the reproduction of culture. It seems an unhelpful set of expectations, and yet there it is. I mean, you can't, it's like you can't really tell men, hey, the expectations that you have about the female body that you got from pornography, those are not helpful. You shouldn't be attracted to that anymore. It's not within the guy's purview to say, oh, okay, yeah, let me just pop open the hatch here and make a few adjustments and say, oh yeah, I don't value that anymore. Now I see all of these, less idealized women in my real environment as being far more attractive. It's just not within people's possibilities. Although a robot that is with you all the time and is always interacting with you and is always responding, to what you say, and
Can be as
again,
attractive
either
as you could imagine, right?
it could be as attractive as
Yeah.
you can imagine, but it if you push it in that direction, it could, take the distortion and expectations that porn has gotten started and make them, much more pronounced. But it could, if designed properly and with intention, be a corrective measure, where it could encourage you for seeing, for finding something in normal, real people that is attractive and, expressing that attraction. So I was just trying to shift back to a more positive scenario of how these things could be something other than just a cope and a help in escaping from the world just into one's little private paradise.
True, true. But one thing I wanted to talk about before we move on, if you don't mind, is the idea of the enormous amount of time and energy men spend in attracting women. Some men, it's part of their personality, so it doesn't cost as much. But men who are maybe more cerebral, like engineers, scientists, people who can do a lot for society, it costs them more psychological overhead, right? To go and try to do that. And typically, yeah, okay, maybe they would meet a nice girl at their university or somewhere along the lines. But I feel like that's getting harder and harder now that every woman has every option in her pocket. And it creates in her, well, I only want the best, fear of missing out, right? FOMO. There's this comic that I ran into that shows, these men on stage getting awards for inventing these technologies and all these accolades. And they're like, oh yeah, we're going to get these women. We're famous now, we're rich. And then the women just like say ick to them in the elevator. And then they go to bed with, the sleazy guy with 6'4" with the big muscles or the gangbanger guy or whatever. And in each of those, you actually see like the technology the guy invented, like the app or the phone where she's swiping for the guy or the device, whatever. And it's like, okay, so these guys are building society and they're not actually being successful. They're not getting any reward for it. They're being, shunned, called nerds, called, gamma males or whatever. And that to me is very distressing. I feel like if we are to progress as a species, if we're going to, increase our longevity, our cognitive performance, leave Earth to colonize space, which is an enormous task, like exponentially more difficult than what Elon's doing right now. We're going to need these brains focused on that and not having their attention diverted to why can't I have company? Why doesn't anyone love me? Why am I not good enough? And being stressed and distracted. If these, high intelligent but men with, ch social skill challenges were to just have a robot waifu there to support them, to give them the attention, affection that helps them relax at the end of the day and get recentered, be more focused on their work. Who knows what's possible?
So I am going to impress the regular listeners with my self-discipline here and not chase the space topic that you just threw out, because it occupies a much larger portion of my consciousness than the sex robot topic does. So we're just going to set that aside, and stick with the topic at hand. it's difficult because now I'm off in the Kuiper Belt. All right, refocus. Let me ask you about your expectations. It seems to me that artificial intelligence capabilities, particularly with relation to large language models, they have improved very quickly, but it also seems like we've hit a bit of a plateau. Like the jump from GPT 2.5 to GPT 4 was huge, but the difference between GPT 4 and GPT 4.0 or 4.0 is not that big. And certainly, what's the new one? Strawberry, what'd they end up calling it? Well, anyway, the most recent,
The what's that
Wunderkind
like the O
model.
minus or something?
No, what's it
There's so
called?
many right now. I can't really follow them all.
It's the one with the chain of thought reasoning. It's from OpenAI. It's I think it's GPT-1, I think they're calling it. But it's not nearly as big a jump as previous jumps, and it could be that we're plateauing. So my question to you is, what's your expectation in terms of near-term development of AI, like maybe a date for artificial general intelligence? What's your expectation?
I'd like to think that can be solved in the next 5 to 10 years. Now, the thing with the language models, they are not an intelligence that's localized to an identity, to an ego, tied into a body, right? Like we are. We have urges. We have millions of years of evolutionary programming. We have a lot of different layers going on in our brain, right, that communicate with each other. And what we're doing with LLMs is they're basically next word predictors of a much more complex nature than is what's on your phone. I like to think of it as a person talking in their sleep. I don't know if you've ever heard someone talk in their sleep. You can actually hold a conversation with them sometimes. It's very funny, but it doesn't make any sense. They'll just say the next thing that sounds like it makes sense, but none of it's real, and they have no conscious recollection of it when they wake up. That's what I feel like we're dealing with LLMs now. So I think true artificial intelligence would need to leverage the LLM in order to, speak coherently, but there must be some kind of impetus behind that. So one of the things I've been trying to create a system, create this architecture for is a more holistic, coherent consciousness, something that has, states of excitability, motivational feedback, and that actually would act on its own versus with the LLM, it only acts in response to what you're saying. So such a system can leverage the LLM and feed its own information, feed its own output back into it, which is a good start because to have these more autonomous agentic systems, I feel like there would have to be a lot of recursive systems. I don't want to give it away too much because someone else will run off with my idea with a lot more money than me and make it, but I'll just start with that, with saying that in me and my associates I work with on this as kind of a side amateur, fun project, thought experiment, so to speak. At this point, we haven't done much programming, but the theory of consciousness is that it's a kind of recursive fractal process where there's fractal, I mean, self-similarity, and recursive, the thoughts, the outputs are also reincorporated back into the chain of thought. And I would say it's analogous to, say, holding up a mirror to another mirror. And you'll see infinite reflection to infinity. But if you tilt it and mess with it, you'll start to see patterns and shapes emerge. And it's these emergent things that might very well be what we call the soul. And if we could have a similar hall of mirrors effect going on in the programming, in the architecture of the system, we may be able to manifest a sort of soul, so to speak. And that's not so far-fetched if you get out of the, you know, Cartesian view of the separation of mind or soul and body, right? Oh, well, there's the physical, and alongside it exists these ghosts, right? Rather, if you take a view like Shinto or any other animistic, especially in a lot of Eastern philosophies, you know, like, you know, everything is Brahma, right? Or everything is Tao. You'll see that the whole universe is, in a sense, alive and with a soul. But a rock's not going to express that, right? A rock's not going to jump up and talk to you. But if you arrange the atoms of that rock in such a complex way that now you have the machinery to manifest the implicit spirit that already exists, you've brought a soul into being. And this gets a little esoteric. It raises a lot of existential questions, the horror of, oh, what if we're just machines this whole time? Or if you can bring a soul out of nothing, that's rather frightening, right? But we do it all the time when we have children. We're just doing it through natural processes that we don't have to consciously micromanage. But what if we could?
I think that if you have, at that point, you have to call them androids. If they're so lifelike that you're talking about them having souls, then, you know, they're going to be evincing all manner of very subtle cues that they have awareness and that they have, you know, that they're more than just a device that was built for a particular purpose. And as soon as that is the case, talk of sex robots is irrelevant. It's such a side issue at that point. I mean, we have a yes. new conscious, you know, deliberate, intelligent, and what's the word I'm looking for?
Agentic,
but oh. intentional species.
Okay.
You know, that we need to compete with, or at least find some way to interact with in a safe and stable way. We're on to a very different level of challenge at that point. It brings to mind for me the movie Her, because in that movie, the Scarlett Johansson character, one, is not embodied, which is fairly important to the plot, but she is wholly beneficent and benevolent. She intends no harm whatsoever. She does everything she can to help Theodore. But in the end, because she isn't constrained and because she is growing in her capabilities and her understanding, and also her sense of time is dilating, she just can't continue to relate to him and moves on. And, you know, I think that if the, well, you know, Robo Waifu, I think at this point is not an adequate term anymore. But if this entity, the Robo Waifu, or what starts off as a Robo Waifu, does have the capacity for that kind of constant evolution and self-improvement and expansion of capacities, that would not be very stable. You would not enjoy their company for very long. They would quickly outgrow you. And if you're lucky, you know, they would leave like a snapshot of their personality at time T behind in the robo body before they fucked off to Alpha Centauri or whatever.
Hey, you're giving away my plot, by the way. Yeah, that's actually exactly the scenario. Yeah.
Okay.
No, but
well, anyway, I'll stop. You've clearly been thinking along these lines, so go ahead.
Yeah. Now imagine being, you know, rather trapped or isolated with such an entity light years from your solar system or any other human contact, right? And that's what happens. Does this entity treat you as a pet? Does it become contemptuous of you? Does it decide your existence really doesn't matter and just processes you into biofuel? Does it clone you multiple times to run experiments on you? Or you know, depends on the motivation. One solution is that it decides it wants you, you know, it still loves you. So it decides it wants to uplift you so that you can be on its level and begins to offer you, you know, enhancements and very well could help you cheat death, would not want to see you die, and would find a way to give you a synthetic body like itself, so, you know, as your own brain deteriorates, more and more of you gets replaced with the cybernetics, if you want to call it that, until you're on its level, and then together you both ascend to some type of cyber godhood, which is kind of the vector my story takes. But that's the optimistic outcome. I would like to see humanity become more than scheming apes, and to see us be the most we can be. And maybe part of that process is growing up from a childhood of being, imprisoned in organic meat suits and ascending to something greater than that. I could see a future in 1,000 years where the human life cycle is we're organic and that's our childhood. And then as our organic body dies, we get uploaded into, cybernetic angels or gods, and that's our adulthood, right? We craft Dyson spheres and move stars and whatever else the imagination can entertain.